You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I am Lori Walsh. For about a year, Governor Kristi Noem's office has been without a chief of staff. As of this week, well, that's still the case. Darren Seeley, the Bureau of Human Resources and Administration Commissioner, was named the new chief of operations in her office. He'll fill a role similar to the chief of staff, but he won't receive that title. There are nuances to this. So for our Dakota Political Junkies conversation today, we have Jonathan Ellis. He is the co-founder of the Dakota Scout and is with us in the studio. Hey, how's it going?
It's going very well. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of this position, because Governor Noem has famously cycled through several chiefs of staff and now is saying, you know, I don't really need this position, but yet we are going to call this a chief of operations. What's going on here? What do you think we need to set this up?
Is this maybe the ultimate latitude promotion that you've ever seen? I don't, you know, I mean, it sounds like the functionality is the same as the chief of staff, which is kind of coordinating between the governor's office and other departments. So functionally, it sounds very much like what they would do. Why the title? I don't know. Perhaps she wants to be in a position to say that she's not losing another chief of staff in the event that Darren Seeley were to leave. I don't know. I'm not exactly positive. I mean, our questions went unanswered about the motivation there.
Okay. So he's also the Bureau of Human Resources and Administration Commission, which was a combination of two. And in her book, her most recent book, you know, she talked about shrinking the leadership of state government and said she was going to continue to make it smaller. You know, she combined Department of Ag and Natural Resources. So this combining of roles is important to her. This seems like a lot of roles for Darren Seeley, though. There's a lot going on here. Are there thoughts about the effectiveness of this? Think back to previous chiefs of staff. I was reading Tony Van Huysen's history about this when the last chief of staff, Mark Miller, left, and what this person really does and how it's worked in the past. This is a change from what we've seen previously. Not a radical change, but an adjustment.
Yeah, I think if you're wearing the hat of the administrator over human resources, I mean, that's a pretty big job by itself. I mean, the state is a huge employer. You know, you've got administrative issues. So, yeah.
They're replacing him, is that? Do you know that? Is he still doing all of this?
He's still doing all of this.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So it's an additional duties. Mm-hmm. Additional duties as assigned.
As assigned, right. Called latitude promotion.
We've all done that. Any feedback you're hearing from other people about this?
I have not heard any, but then I haven't been out there. I mean, it seems like it's an obscure issue for a lot of people. It's a political issue.
Yeah,
it's a political issue in the sense that politicians are always, whether Democrat, Republican, I mean, Kamala Harris has this issue. John McCain had this issue. That they are sort of criticized and ridiculed a little bit in the world of politics when they can't keep staff. And so that she's the butt of those jokes again, that she's not a good person to work for. So that's what some people would say. And those, you know, when you have constant turnover like that, in that position in particular. But you know, other politicians have had the same issue. It's just something we in the political world kind of take note of.
We're paying attention. Mm-hmm. How about the pipeline for leadership? When I look back at then Governor Rounds, chiefs of staff, you see Neil Fulton in there for Governor Dugard, Dusty Johnson, Tony Van Huysen. These are South Dakotans who go on to do other roles in South Dakota, often in government. Or Neil Fulton, dean of the law school. I think one of Rounds' chiefs of staff went to Poet.
I didn't remember Tony being a Rounds' chief of staff.
I'm sorry. What did I say? No, he's Dugard's chief of staff.
Dugard, yes.
He was. And for Governor Noem. I misspoke there.
Yeah, I mean, we had Mark Johnston, I think, was one.
Here's the list if you want to.
Yeah, leave it to Tony to come up with.
Tony Van Huysen.
To have this.
Hi. Thank you for your blog. That helped put some of this into context for. But I guess my question, broadly speaking, is when we see a governor who has many people who are from out of state, and then when they leave, whether it's in her communications department or in her, you know, assistant area, they leave, they go back out of state. Are we seeing what happens in the future for the pipeline of state government if you're not bringing those people in and if they're not shifting to other leadership roles in the state?
Well, I think there's still a lot of talent in South Dakota and South Dakota politics. you know, one of the reasons why I think she shifted after the first couple of years of her looking out of state was perhaps the influence of Corey Lewandowski, who she met, you know, shortly into her first term. And she's always been sort of, quote, a fighter. And she wants staff that's going to, quote, be fighters. And in South Dakota, the political world is much gentler than it is sort of at a national level. And I think that's so looking out of state has suited her temperament, frankly.
Mm. All right. Amelia Joy, who was in her press department, has left mm-hmm. and moved on to a D.C. job. Maggie Seidel, does she still live in South Dakota?
She
when
does.
She first left, she stayed, even though she wasn't
She's still
originally
in South
from South Dakota. So does the departure of Amelia Joy say anything to you?
No.
Press secretary, she's going to America First Policy Institute.
No, I think that's a natural to move on to a Washington, D.C. I mean, she's young, she's probably ambitious and wants to move up in that world. And when it's pretty obvious now that Chrissy Noem didn't run for president, and I think that B, her hopes of making the vice president selection are pretty dim at this point. And so, you know, for somebody who's ambitious, they would probably want to move back and be involved in more national politics.
Yeah, I think that's one of the questions. Does Amelia Joy leave after the book release and the press tour that went so wrong? This is her press secretary who has now decided to move to other things. Coincidence? Always was going to happen because these kind of jobs cycle in and out? Or was there an impact of that press tour that made Amelia Joy want to say, I'm going somewhere else?
I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that. And, her role as a press secretary was not, I mean, the press did not really have a lot of interaction with her. I mean, Ian Ferry, who's been around now for a while, is sort of the primary spokesman for the governor.
Yeah. And now what about this former chief of staff engaging in federal lobbying on behalf of the governor to a $120,000 contract? Tell me a little bit about what you know there. You wrote about this in the Dakota Scout.
Yeah, well, that's kind of an opposite situation. Yeah. That this was her longtime chief of staff. I mean, she had virtually no turnover in that office when she was in Congress. Jordan Stoick, she hired him. He's a South Dakota kid, South Dakota man. I guess he's older now, who was very seasoned already in the D.C. political world. He'd worked for a couple Congress people. He'd worked for a senator, and so in 2010, she's obviously new, incoming. She'll be an incoming freshman, and so Jordan is hired with his experience, and he ends up being the chief of staff and really guided the office until he left in 2017, when it was evident that Kristi Noem had said she was going to run for governor. So he wanted to stay in Washington. So he went and was briefly at Treasury. He was, very easy to work with in my dealings with him over the years. Enjoyed working with him. He was very responsive. Mm-hmm. Then he left, went to Treasury, and then went and worked for the Manufacturers Association for a while as a lobbyist. He was the vice president of their sort of government operation there, and he was there, I want to say, for about 4 or 5 years before leaving, and now he's started his own firm, and one of his first clients is the state of South Dakota. And Governor Kristi Noem, it's unusual. It's not unheard of, but it is unusual for the governor's office to hire a D.C. lobbyist. Rounds, when he was governor, had done it briefly near the end of his second term, had hired the Bacherny Group, again, a group out of South Dakota, South Dakota ties. And Governor Dugard eliminated that. Of course, he inherits a government that has a very, tight budget, and so that was an expense he eliminated, and they didn't have one again. So fast forward, more recently, last year, I want to say, they hired briefly for probably a specific issue, one firm, just for one quarter, and then more recently, they signed the contract in April with Jordan Stoick's firm.
All right. When a new governor comes in, does this all just change? About how often, through the years of covering state government, is this par for the course? You know, new people come in, they reorganize, the org chart looks different, they bring in new people, the new governor comes in, it all changes again, or is state government largely kind of plodding and consistent?
You know, in my experience, that she's made more changes than I think the previous two governors that I was around for, and even to some extent to Governor Janklow. So there's been, I feel like now, again, Tony might be able to correct me on that. But I feel like there has been definitely more change, the consolidation on the on those four departments, and again, new people that have been brought in. So yeah,
it's
I think
hard to make it bigger.
Hard to make government
bigger when the last governor has made a pretty big statement about her intentions to make it smaller. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like raising taxes after you cut taxes, right?
Yeah.
It can be hard to sell that.
Be hard to do that, for sure.
Be interesting to see in the future. We haven't talked, you and I, since the primary, and a lot of incumbents were out the door. Any residual effect from the primary that you are still thinking about, especially in regards to the potential of voters having a say on open primaries in November?
Joe Kirby, who was on our podcast shortly after the election, was very forthright in the fact that he's got a lot of new friends among moderate Republicans, given the turnout, given what happened. And I do know that there have been some donations made by some fairly prominent Republicans that I think will show up in campaign finance reports later this year when that reporting takes place. South Dakota, unlike a lot of places, doesn't have as many reporting requirements, so we have to wait around. But I've heard some names that I think some people will be surprised by. So I think at the end of the day, I think it helped that effort. Will it be enough? Yeah, we'll see. But it definitely it was a positive for those who
helped
want it.
Some of the newcomers to this show who are listening now understand what we're talking about here. So the incumbents who lost during the South Dakota primary were not all moderates, but significant number of moderates got ousted by people who had sort of positioned themselves to the political right of those moderates, and they won. And so this effort to move into an open primary then is an effort by whom to do what? Because you're letting the Democrats and all the independents come in and vote on your primary, which some Republicans would traditionally argue against. Where is the push coming from?
Well, I mean, the argument is that the practical effect of this would be that more than likely the more extreme candidates are not going to win in the general election, that more moderates, let's say, and there will be a lot of races in which there are going to be two Republicans on the general election ballot. Mm-hmm. And there'll be typically a more moderate one, and that appeals to probably a broader share of the voting population than, you know, somebody who's running in a primary election. The voter turnout is pretty self-selective in the Republican Party there, and that by that I mean that more conservative Republicans tend to vote in the primary, and so the effect will be that I think more moderate type candidates will end up winning in general elections.
What are you hearing from Democrats? Do they want the open primaries too? Because the argument would be that if a more conservative, and that's a very broad term, candidate beat a more moderate Republican candidate, again, very broad terms, that might give the Democrat an opportunity to position themselves as a moderate compared to who came out of the primary from the GOP. I know we're splitting serious hairs today, but largely speaking, what is the Democratic Party saying about open primaries in South Dakota? Are they liking it too?
I think that they're on board with it. Now there's some reluctance. I mean, I'm not all of them, but I think that they're going to be on board with it. They were reluctant in 2016 to remove party labels from races. But I think that they're on board with this one. I think that they recognize that there are some situations in which they will benefit. I mean, there are going to be many situations where there's not a Democrat on the general election ballot in some of these races. But I think that there is a recognition that there are some opportunities probably for them as well.
For listeners who don't know, you just came out of the Sioux Falls City Council with a win for the Dakota Scout as a newspaper, being the official newspaper of record for the city of Sioux Falls. We talked about the legislation during the legislative session that kind of cleared the path for that. So talk about now what that means for you going forward and for, you know, people who want access to those public and legal notices.
We don't start until July, the first week of July. That's when it becomes official. But we are actually our next couple print editions. They will be in our print editions as we work with the city on the workflow issues of getting the legal notices. So we're already going to start that. I think you will see a drastic the way we've designed this. Our designer the way she's done this, I think you will see just a tremendous increase in the visibility of these in our print product. We will change our printing schedule a little bit. We print normally on Wednesdays. Now we will be printing on Thursdays to accommodate the city's schedule.
Okay.
So just a slight difference there. And, you know, the papers are still free in locations throughout the town. So there'll be no access, no payment access. They're free on our website. And then so there's no barrier there in order for people to access those.
So what are people going to find? These are public notices that include what?
Well, they include bids that, you know, governments are required to put out bids for, services and things of that nature. And so there'll be bid notices. There'll be meeting minutes. So you can look through, like, what happened at this city council meeting. You know, so you don't necessarily have to attend it, but you can get a rundown. The city has done traditionally a good job of keeping kind of more detailed minutes, so you can kind of get an idea of what happened at a meeting. So those kind of legal things that people, I think, who want to be informed, they'll have access to them for free.
Yeah. What does it mean to you personally?
More work.
You fought for it. You fought for this work.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We're in the process of the workflow issues and figuring that out. But I mean, I think it's obviously going to be a benefit for us. I mean, we will certainly look to also get the legals for other entities. In fact, I think Baltic named us their paper last night. And so for us, it allows us to, frankly, we're hiring. It will kind of be a revenue source of allow us to kind of expand. And that's what we want. I mean, I haven't taken a vacation in a couple of years. At some point, I would like to maybe go hiking in Colorado again.
Jonathan Ellis with the Dakota Scout. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Lori.